Well, our final speaker is Don Ziegler. He's the Director of Prevention and Healthy Lifestyles at the American Medical Association. And Don is also active in APHA in the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Other Drugs section, as well as the Trade and Health Forum. Welcome.
Thanks. Okay. It's a joy to be here. A lot of competition for sessions, I know, and we all run back and forth. Delighted to be here. We're talking about something where we want to raise the tariffs and the prices rather than reduce them on some projects. We're talking about the we're calling dangerous concoction, update of the alcohol industry's involvement in trade and health agreements, and what we can do about it. Really, very similar in what. Oh, good. Yes, thank you. And much of this is very similar to issues related to the tobacco industry, and probably soon in the food industry as we deal with other what I call corporate induced problems around the world in public health. I'm sure there's, some of you know far more than I do on trade agreements, and some aren't quite as familiar. But trade agreements are global through the World Trade Organization. Maybe regional, like NAFTA, which is a North America Free Trade Agreement between Mexico, U.S. and Canada, that Ben talked about. But then also, well, they may be bilateral, similar to the ones that were just signed recently between the U.S. and Korea, or U.S. and Panama, or U.S. and Colombia. Those are bilateral. And the goals of the agreements are to reduce or remove regulations on the free trade of products and services, removal of regulations, and the continual progress to liberalize even more. And that problem is that once this process is started, it's virtually irreversible. And there's some very serious complications for public policy. Now, obviously, the fundamental interest is to reduce tariffs and regulations, which mean increasing market sales and consumption. And problem is that that's just counter to what we want to do in public health on alcohol control and tobacco control, where we want to reduce the overall consumption, reduce promotion, and reduce the harmful consequences. There's a direct conflict between public health and free trade. The operating principle or the assumption of our trade agreements is generally that alcohol is just like any other product. It's just like impregnated mosquito nets, for example, or cotton, or milk, or coffee. So the more product is desirable. But the problem is, alcohol is no ordinary commodity. There are significant public health and social implications to it. Now, countries can restrict products. I mean, they can have a special category of sensitive products like arms and ammunition and explosives and things, which can be excluded. When the trade agreements liberalize trade, and they all follow the neocon, free trade, not fair trade, but free trade principles. There's more competition for market share. There's more aggressive advertising. There's more what we call aspirational goods, where the products are promoted that people want to aspire to. They want to be like the American who in the beer ad, or the sexy person, or the star, or whatever, and promotes international brands, things that are easier to smoke, the alcopops, which are called the girly drinks, to get young people, especially girls, to drink, and they also increase or lower the price generally. Now, the trade agreements that affect alcohol are particularly at the global level. It's particularly one of the trade agreements called GATS, the Global Agreement on Trade and Services. And this can affect the ability to regulate alcohol under the terms of restriction of trade. And under these, there are certain things that require that if challenged, a country would have to say that a particular rule is totally necessary, that there's nothing else that could be done to accomplish the goal that would be less restrictive. And, for example, the industries would say, well, you don't want to restrict promotion of alcohol. Why not just have an education campaign? For example, our Drink Responsibly campaign. They'll say that that is as effective as what you're trying to do by keeping prices up or restricting advertising. And the problem is when there are disputes between countries, they are decided by trade lawyers, as was mentioned earlier, and these people have little or no interest or knowledge of health, and they come with a bias that that free trade is the goal. And the problem is in some of the trade agreements, particularly the bilateral ones and the regional ones by the U.S. and some others, there are companies can actually sue another government. Now, this they can't do this domestically, but it gives the domestic the protector investment protections where a company can actually sue another government. For example, when California wished to restrict a particular additive in gasoline because it would help the environment, they found that it actually leached into the ground and caused cancer. So California tried to restrict that. Well, under NAFTA, a foreign company actually sued the U.S. for something that California was trying to do. And now most of the challenges have been more on environmental challenges, like a U.S. company challenged one of the states in Mexico that wanted to clean up a toxic waste dump and make a park out of it. Well, they were challenged and lost it. So these agreements have very, very powerful terms. Now, in alcohol policy, there are certain targets. Now, not all of these have been used and tried. And sometimes these challenges are on environmental reasons or the tobacco or other products, but the potential is there for the alcohol industry as well. And the ones that are potential targets are laws concerning the distribution of alcohol, for example, licensing of alcohol might be the restrictions that we might have in communities about the hours of service, how many hours can bars be open, the number of alcohol outlets. We know that bar density is a very significant predictor of problems, and that could be challenged by a trade agreement. There might be restrictions on alcopops, what we want to do in one state versus another about these drinks that are prepared to entice young women to drink. There might be challenges to the requirements on training owners of bars about and servers of minors and intoxicated. There might be challenges on what we call keg registration, where we're trying to track down where the kegs were bought. And so if there's problems, we can track them down. Well, there's potential under the trade agreements to challenge these. Also in government monopolies, Canadians and Northern Europeans and the U.S. have a number of states where you go into a government store to buy the alcohol. And these are government monopolies. And they're very effective or more effective than because they control. The primary goal isn't just to maximize sales, but there are more restrictions, there are more controls on who is sold to, and you don't sell to drunks and things of that sort. Well, the industry wants to liberalize these, and so there are challenges. Although the U.S. Community Preventive Services Task Force said this is really bad policy to try to liberalize this. Also, there could be challenges on information, education, and prevention. For example, there could be potentially some of our laws on the BAC, the blood alcohol level concentrations, or our policies on drink driving, or the minimal legal drinking age. We could say that might discriminate. There might be challenges on the laws on alcohol advertising and sponsorship. Some of the communities that that deal with drink specials. A foreign company might be able to challenge that. Some of our restrictions on radio, TV, internet, press, and billboards might be challenged. The potential is there under the trade agreements. Well, some of the recent issues that are happening, challenges in Thailand and Brazil about alcohol labeling. Trade agreements have been used to challenge what some of these countries are trying to do by requiring more restrictions on labels on products. Thailand was seeking to remove tobacco and alcohol as normal commodities from trade agreements, which is good. I wish their country would dry out a little bit. There's an international conference scheduled in a couple of weeks on alcohol, but it had to be postponed because of the flooding there. But it has nothing to do with alcohol, but just postpone the conference, you know. Some of these countries wanted to have bold alcohol labels with warnings, and these have been opposed by under the World Trade Organization rules by the U.S. and the European Union. In Thailand, they were seeking to remove tobacco and as a normal commodity. There's challenges, too, under alcohol taxes in the Philippines. Also, the recent challenges, we're not sure how they're going to be. The European is pressing for the control states in the United States to be able to privatize so they can, you know, have more outlets. There's an interesting thing that is really strange. There was a Utah banned internet gambling, and it was challenged by Antigua, the little island of Antigua, where they had a lot of internet gambling. And it was challenged under the World Trade Organization. But the U.S. said, well, we don't have any, we're not considering internet gambling under the trade agreements. But the lawyers on the trade panel said, well, it follows under recreation. And you have recreation as something you want to stimulate in your society. So internet gambling is the same as recreation. And the U.S. says, what do you mean? We had no intention of doing that. The U.S. lost that case. So that enables a whole bunch of other parties in the World Trade Organization to ask for concessions in the United States. And one of them is the U.S. is now being challenged by the European Union to open up our control states to alcohol. I mean, it's really bizarre. Really bizarre. Also, the Doha Agreement under World Trade Organization stalled. Right now, there's negotiations undergoing right now with the Trans-Pacific Partnership of 8 or 9 countries, the U.S. and 8 others in the whole Pacific area. The American Medical Association came out with a very strong statement to the USTR to remove alcohol and tobacco from the trade agreements. Don't treat them as ordinary commodities. And the American College of Preventive Medicine joined us on that. And the pediatrics and family physicians came out in support of restricting tobacco in those. So we're really proud. It's interesting now, the UN just had a special session on non-communicable diseases, and it really challenged the thinking that, you know, the non-communicable diseases, the chronic diseases are you know, industry-induced. We don't want to maximize the consumption of many of the products and commercialized and through globalization, and so we have to deal with these in our trade agreements. So what we have now is a perfect storm for industry to expand in developing countries and to challenge policies. Real quick, I have a minute or so. Okay, countermeasures. We have to apply something of a precautionary principle that's used more in the European Union, saying let's be careful. Let's consider the health implications of our policy before public health over trade and free markets. We need to introduce strong evidence-based policies, keep them in place in our societies, and make alcohol no more commitments in our new trade agreements. Treat it as an extraordinary commodity in the demand of public health voice in our trade committees. The advisory committees to the U.S. government are totally dominated by industry. They know what's going on. We can't get copies of the proposed trade agreement with the Pacific countries. But if you're on the Trade Advisory Committee and you're from Philip Morris or Anheuser-Busch, or if you're on the committee, you help write that, and you know what's in there. So it's very, very difficult. So we have some challenges. Fortunately, we were able to get the medical community behind this. The policy passed a few years ago by the World Medical Association at the instigation of our AMA to call for total removal of alcohol as a product in trade agreements, and to totally exclude it. We have very fine language there, so we're real proud of that. But we've got our work cut out for us, and it's a challenge. We're glad you're here, and we'd be interested to hear your questions.
All right. Thank you so much. That was an excellent series of presentations, and I think really illustrates all the different ways that trade impacts health. So thank you. What I'm going to do now is open up for questions, and because we're recording the session, I'm going to repeat your question. So it's recorded, and then I know it's going to be a little awkward, but whoever's going to respond, if you could come up to the podium. All right. Yes, in the back.
I think there's more laws than commercial laws. I understand there are things called criminal laws. And it seems to me that you're playing in their sandbox, and you should shift sandboxes. And you should do that by making an effort, and if the AMA proposed it, it would probably have some legs, to criminally prosecute individually the presidents of these corporations that intentionally sell products that they know are going to kill people. And I'll be satisfied with manslaughter.
That's what's happening.
Because if I take some poison and put it in the water, even though I don't know who it's going to kill, nobody's going to accuse me of manslaughter. They're going to accuse me of murder. Okay?
Right.
If I don't put an ad out that says, drink the water, it's okay for you. All right? Or it'll make you feel better in a social situation. All right? So I don't understand why that's not the same thing. And then you're playing in your box. Let them sit in a box in court where they're in jeopardy of going to jail in Kenya.
Great. So I'm going to rephrase your question as, how do we switch sandboxes, and how could we potentially use criminal law to make changes? And the question was directed within the alcohol.
Okay, well, good. Good luck. I don't know how to...
It's easier with tobacco.
It's easier with tobacco and yet, under U.S. law, we have the Justice Department went after the tobacco industry, and under RICO, which was the racketeering laws that were used against the mafia for organized crime, and they were convicted of that, of actually violating the laws. And yet, all we could do is, in our society, is maybe fine them. What are we doing with what happened in Wall Street? I mean, you have whole societies that are collapsing economically, and we bail them out. I don't know enough about, I don't know anything about the international law in this area. We've had Nuremberg trial with on genocide after World War II, I don't know. Some of my other panelists might have some comments on that. I don't know how we can do that.
I set you on the wrong box. Murder, manslaughter,
yeah,
are prosecuted locally.
Yes.
Everywhere in the world.
Correct.
It's a local crime. So if there's a lung cancer in Washington, D.C., and it's attributed to smoking, it's up to the local DA to decide to indict the president of Philip Morris for manslaughter. It's local everywhere. That's the beauty of it. You just have to call for it and find some wacko prosecutor somewhere who's got guts.
The comment was that, if there's a crime, it's domestic, so you go after it domestically and locally. in that case. So, but you gave the example of Ghana before. You know, somebody dies of lung cancer or tobacco or alcohol-related problem in Ghana because of some international corporation was expanding its market there intentionally. But I'm not sure. I don't know. I appreciate the comments from the public on that. I don't know if there is an avenue. I'd love to know it because we'd like to really advocate, for action on that.
Okay.
Any comments from
anything? Yes.
Another question for Don.
Okay.
Traditionally, the states have the power to regulate the health, welfare, and morals of the population within their borders under their police power. And I'm just really kind of curious, how does the provisions of an international trade agreement coincide under principles of federalism and the state's rights to regulate health within the police power, such as putting out an ordinance to remove smoking?
Mm-hmm.
How do those things square? Is it an issue of express preemption? Have you read anything about any of that? I'm just curious.
Great. So the question is, what is the relationship between international law and treaties and federalism?
Yeah, and just the state's rights to manage the health.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's my understanding. You know, I'm not an attorney. You're an attorney. Right. But under the trade agreements, it's international, and they preempt local laws, and that's why one of the organizations that is very very concerned about this is a National Association of State Legislators, because they see that their state laws could be are being challenged, particularly most egregiously or most commonly heretofore have been on regulations on environmental issues. That's a challenge. But all these other things are possible, including the state monopoly control of alcohol outlets, for example. That is coming under direct threat through the trade agreements. So. But here, something, I mean, these are irreversible. There's an example where South Africa, under the apartheid government, opened up its markets, signed the trade agreements, opening up health services under the WTO. Well, now they threw out the apartheid government. And now the current government has more of a social justice mentality and was thinking of some sort of a national health plan. They can't do it because of what the apartheid government did in the past. So any foreign company who wants to make money in South Africa will have to be compensated for all the things that they might lose. So South Africa has to back off. I mean, it's...
My next question was about damages.
Right, right. Yeah, right.
The
yeah, could.
That's right.
It's inconceivable. And with the trade agreements where investors can sue a government, and this is in our U.S. law. I mean, our U.S. trade policy is to do this, so allow the corporations to be able to sue a government. Usually it's government to government, but now a corporate. And what example? Australia wanted to work on plain packaging of tobacco. So there's so many trade agreements, hundreds and hundreds of them around the world. So Philip Morris said, Australia, they have an agreement with Hong Kong, signed in 1999, and we have a subsidiary there. So they're suing Australia under a 1999 law because their subsidiary is in Hong Kong. And, I mean, this is the kind of, because they're all intermeshed. And once they're locked in, it's very difficult. And so what countries do, they have the chilling effect. They're afraid of doing some good policy because they might get sued. So the industries are winning. So.
Just briefly with respect to your first question, trade agreements are at the national level. They don't affect subnational governments. So the states, in Canada, the provinces, can do whatever they want, but the national governments can be sued for actions taken by the subnational governments. So you can't tell the state of whatever, of New York, that you can't do something under an internet because the U.S. has signed an international trade agreement, but the U.S. federal government could be sued for what the New York state government has done.
How does that get into place? When did those agreements come into place that these
international
corporations could supersede
that was started, the first one of my knowledge was in NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement, which was signed in early 93, and that's under Chapter 11 of the NAFTA agreement that gives investors the right to sue foreign governments. So you can't sue, under the trade agreement, a U.S. corporation can't sue the U.S. government, but it could sue, a U.S. Corporation could sue the Canadian or Mexican governments.
And that's just spread to all kinds of trade agreements since
then? In the bilateral and the regional ones. That's
it's
U.S.
not,
and the EU.
However, it's not in the WTO.
No.
Yes, go ahead.
I have a question for Dr. Sommerfeld. I was wondering what the tariff comparison is between anti-malarials and bed nets. If there's a difference between the two, and also countries that do have tariffs that are in developing areas, potentially impeding access, the rationale for that is, of course, to raise revenue. Is that revenue going to the public health entities, or any idea on that?
Great. So the first question was, what's the difference in tariff rates between anti-malarials and bed nets? And the second question, can you say it one more time?
Yeah, sure. I'm just wondering, I think the point of raising tariffs is to raise revenue. So the question being, where does that money go?
Okay. The point of tariffs is to raise revenue. What is that money being used for?
I'll show you a very quick... this one here, if you can see the shapes, actually, let me go down to a couple of more. I have the map answer to your question. Here we're looking at medicines, and this is actually Africa, so let me go down to the global. Here we're looking at medicines, so these are malaria medicines. The blue circles means 0% tariffs. The various shapes is more than 0%, varying. The highest is the triangle. And then next we have the bed nets. And you can see that tariffs are higher on bed nets because there are more triangles and other shapes. So I'll go back to the medicines. And then go back. Now, next we'll look at the nets. Now, in terms of what is that revenue being used? And I think that we've actually commissioned a study to be done by the ITC, the International Trade Center, in Geneva, and they looked exactly at this question. So you're not the first to think of it, but it's a very good question. So there was this perception that there would be revenue loss, but that's actually probably not the case, especially if we look at the productivity gains that are realized with improved health. And even though a lot of the people who are sick with malaria are children, adults get malaria too. And when children are sick, adults have to take care of the children. So we actually have developed a model that looks at the economic productivity loss from malaria, and they're huge losses. It's a real drain. As far as I know, revenue generated from tariffs, for example, on medicines, and some countries do have not very high tariffs on medicines, but they do have tariffs. I don't believe that they are earmarked for health purposes, but I cannot say that with certainty across all countries.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. great. So the question is, how do you project or predict the sort of expenditures that will occur, and specifically as it relates to this Canada example?
Well, the short answer is that you don't really know. All you can do is take what's, you can look at, in this case, you can look at a set of drugs that became, when their patents were filed, what would have happened if they had gotten additional patent protection, how long would that, how much longer time would they, would it have been until generics would have come on the market, and then you can look at what their annual sales for these drugs are, assume that the sales, make assumptions about what the sales would be during the extra time that they would have been protected, what's the average price of a generic compared to a brand name, and do some simple arithmetic and come up with calculations. But these are all guesses, and nobody really knows for sure what the overall impact would be. This is only some, you'll only be able to figure this out in retrospect should these things go through, and you can look at how much extra time individual drugs get and look at what the extra costs would be. If you want the specifics of the calculations that I put up there, they're in one of the papers that I cited at the end. And if you want the reference, I can give it to you.